tongue is tied because of his neck.
The House Judiciary Committee is convened in attendance. Representative Coghill, Ramris, Dahlstrom, Samuels, Lynn is on his way, and hello, Representative Lynn. Here comes Representative Holmes. We are going to try and go this afternoon until we lose our quorum, or till 4:30, whichever comes first. Try and stay on a schedule since we are backlogged. First before us is House Bill 109, the Ethics Bill. No.
I'm out of here.
There's no camera.
First before us is the eminent domain bill. We need to adopt the CS. Representative Dahlstrom.
Mr. Chair, I'd move the CS for House Bill number 175, version E.
We have House Bill 175 before us. We had already closed public comment. It was before us for committee discussion. Is there discussion on the bill? Seeing none.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Coghill.
Only that, just for members and for my, I'm reading it out loud because I had to remind myself that the recreational structure is a permanent structure now, owned by the beneficiary of a trust. And so I, until just the other day, I wasn't too sure how all that would go. But I think with all the trust stuff that we talked about, I'm better acquainted. So I'm not going to object. I just wanted to say it out loud because it's a problem I had.
Representative Dahlstrom.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion that we move CS for House Bill number 175, version E, which on attached, no physical note, and invoke the recommendations, please.
See no objection. House Bill 175 moves from committee. Thank you for your compelling testimony, Representative Dahlstrom.
For the record, my name is Craig Johnson. Thank you.
Quit while you're ahead.
Can I have a crispy
crisp?
All right.
You only sponsor the bill so you get something to eat, dude.
Representative Grunberg has joined us. He's familiar with House Bill 175 and no changes.
Yeah.
We are going to take up House Bill 187 next. We recognize that Representative Booth is with us. Good afternoon. We do have, after the bill's introduction, Jason Moulton from Safeway Cars and Kip Knutson from Swarton. I think we have somebody from Holiday here to testify. With that, if you'll introduce yourself for the record, and we're happy to see you. Okay. We also have somebody from the Department of Law here. And somebody from Hess, you can participating through the LIO. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is David Scott, staff to Representative Johansson. Representative sends his regrets and apologies. He couldn't make it here. He has a scheduling conflict. Mr. Chairman, House Bill 187 addresses the lack of due process under the Fifth Amendment of the Alaska and United States Constitution that retailers face during business license enforcement proceedings under Alaska Statute 4370.075. Mr. Chairman, in the members' packets of the State of Alaska Superior Court decision in the case of Holiday Alaska, Inc. versus the State of Alaska, which was decided on October 26, 2006. The court held that 4370.075 subsection D was unconstitutional because it violated Holiday's due process. As it now stands, Mr. Chairman, a facet of 4370.075 is broken. This proposed legislation aims to fix it. You'll find that the Department of Health and Social Services agrees that because of the Superior Court's ruling, the statute needs to be fixed. The question therefore is, how do we fix this? House Bill 187 proposes that business license holders with tobacco endorsements be afforded a meaningful hearing where mitigating and aggravating facts would be considered by an administrative law judge. In current license enforcement proceedings, the state is not obligated to prove negligence by a retailer. As the conviction of the employee who made the sale is the only admissible evidence. A retailer is prohibited from introducing the evidence of its policies prohibiting illegal sales, its good faith efforts at educating and training of its employees, as well as the sanctions imposed on employees who do not abide by the retailer's requirements. The current system doesn't allow the licensee to introduce mitigating circumstances. Mr. Chairman, I will now turn to the specifics of the bill. Section 1 establishes that the department shall suspend the ability of a business to sell tobacco products only after a hearing is held. Section 2 expands the evidence that the hearing officer shall consider to include 1, did the license holder negligently violate Alaska's prohibitions on the sale of tobacco to minors? And 2, any other evidence that might tend to mitigate or aggravate the length of suspension. Section 3 allows the department to reduce the license suspension period if the license holder establishes that a written policy against the selling of tobacco products to minors was adopted and enforced prior to the date of violation. This section also allows the department and license holder to agree to an informal disposition of suspension. It is not the intent of House Bill 187, Mr. Chairman, to allow businesses that routinely, negligently, and knowingly sell tobacco to minors a decrease in fines and penalties. I think we all agree that these lawbreakers should be punished and that their endorsements to sell tobacco products should be withheld. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for your presentation. Are there questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Cockham.
On the construction of the language, under subsection 2, the amended language is going to be after sub M, a hearing under the subsection is limited to the following questions. And then in sub 5, it says any other evidence that might tend to mitigate or aggravate the length. Could you help me understand the question arrived at in section 5? I'm just at my first reading of it, I'm having trouble catching the drift of it.
Representative Cockell, through the chair, do you mean what would be mitigating or aggravating?
Right.
Okay, if I could give an example, and actually if I could defer to Randy Royero, who has a really good example, I thought.
Right. I would defer to his explanation, Mr. Chairman.
Randy, it is always a pleasure to have you in front of our committee. You're extremely capable. It's nice to see you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Randy Ruaro. I'm staff for Representative Johansson. Through the chair, Representative Coghill, I think an example that might fall under paragraph 5 would be things such as the employer having a employee manual in place that prohibited the sale and provided for an automatic discharge of the employee, posting signs, I guess, programming his cash registers to require someone putting in a birth date so they could tell if they were over age or not. There's probably a number of other things that an employer could do to try to make sure that sales to minors didn't occur. And I think this number 5 is kind of the catch-all that would allow the employer to mention those things in a hearing.
Representative Coghill, if I could, might weigh in, just as a parallel in the alcohol industry, if a server is TAMS trained and fails to check for identification of the minor, it is in Title IV, it is a nick on the licensee. It goes on the permanent record of the licensee, but the penalties accrue to the server that served a minor. However, if the licensee didn't have TAMS trained servers, that might be an aggravator. Or if there was a history of the licensee continuing to serve minors, that also might be an aggravator versus an isolated incident, which would be a mitigating circumstance in a parallel industry that has the same concerns about serving minors. And that would be, in this case, that would be the relationship of alcohol to taxes, as they both have a litmus test at a certain age that kicks in.
Okay. I just, for me, as a simple reading of the matter, it didn't look like the question was emphatically stated. And then it looks to me like, Mr. Chairman, and I might be open to some counsel on this, that really Part 5 is two parts, because you have the mitigator on the length, and then you have the period of suspension if it's in the public interest. And I think those two are two different questions. And maybe they could explain why they fell under the same five, under Part 5.
I'll try to, through the chair, Representative Coghill, I see your point, and it's a valid question. I think the first part of 5 deals with the evidence, I guess, that the employer could bring forward. And it looks to me like the second part of paragraph 5, starting with a period of suspension, it seems to direct the ALJ, seems to set out the standard for which that ALJ can then decide to reduce the suspension after considering, I think, the aggravating and mitigating evidence.
Mr. Chairman, I could see how they would go together. I could just see a probably further question over what is public interest and what is not. Have you anticipated that? Maybe, Mr. Chairman, we could ask that.
Through the chair, I'm sorry.
Just the question is, I could just see, not only do you have the mitigating question, you have the suspension based on maybe a mitigator or an aggravator. But then now you have probably further debate over what is a public interest. And have you anticipated where that might go?
Through the chair, Representative Coghill, I think I see the point you're making there. And it almost appears like there's two different standards that the ALJ could use to decide whether to reduce a penalty. And I don't have a suggestion on language right now that would clarify that, but I do see your point.
Okay. Well, we'll just think about it.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is there other committee discussion for the bill sponsors? Representative Holmes, Representative Dahlstrom. Representative Holmes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My understanding of this bill is that it comes in response to the case that we have in our bill packet, at which it was found to be a due process violation of holidays rights. And I understand that the due process issue that exists does need to be corrected. I'm wondering, though, the due process, in my understanding, the situation is that you have an entity that is licensed to sell cigarettes, and then they have an employee who is obviously the person who is the one actually who is supposed to check the IDs and sell the cigarettes. And how the system has been working now is that when a violation is alleged, it is the employee who goes into the hearing and may plead guilty, and that act, or found guilty, and that is then used in a second hearing against the retail outlet, and the retail outlet is not given an independent opportunity to contest or give evidence to the contrary to show that there was not a negligent selling. Is that more or less correct assessment of where we are?
Representative Holmes, through the chair, yes.
Okay, thank you. I'm wondering if this solution might be a little bit more than what's needed to correct the problem. I'm very sympathetic to the need to correct the due process problem and provide the retail outlet the ability to actually discuss whether or not there was negligence. But it seems to me at a first reading of this that we actually take more than one bite at the apple in this, that we change the standards for more than just allowing the underlying hearing on the negligence. Not we do more than just allow the retail outlet
to contest the underlying facts. We also then give them a lot of other things that weren't in the original law, such as all these other abilities to adding additional mitigators and aggravators and ways in which that the hearing officer can give less than the full sentence. Are all of these factors that I'm discussing, are these new? They're not in the law as it is, the ability to give less than the full sentence, the ability to look at additional aggravators. Is this all new stuff that we would be putting in?
Representative Holmes, to the chair, it's correct. We're giving the administrative law judge discretion.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Cogdill.
Probably because of the need to now go through kind of its own trial on an aggravator or a mitigator, I think I don't have any problem with that being a part of the discussion, because it's almost, even though it's going to be held at the same time, it's a different issue to be discussed by the court. Because what is the law that got passed that said we can't do mitigators as a matter of sentencing? We have to go through a kind of a full, what was it? Blakely. What's the name? Blakely. Yeah, I'm sorry, Blakely. So I don't really have a problem with that. I was just trying to get it. If you're going to change the imposition of sentence, what is the basis of that? And I think if we can get to that, I think that then it's cleaner. So. That's what I'm be looking for, Mr. Chairman.
Is there other comments? Let me share with the committee. We have somebody here from the Holiday Stores. We have over the phone Safeway Cars to Soro, Alaska. And then we also have the Department of Health and Social Services, Department of Law, the ALAA, I'm not sure what entity that is, the American Cancer Society, and the American Heart Association. All wishing to testify on this bill. So I think that we can flesh out some of these issues and concerns as we take it up. Are there any more questions for the bill sponsors? Representative Grunberg, and then Dahlstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Ruaro, is there an appeal taken from this decision?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, there was not.
And the time for appeal has passed.
That's correct, sir. Through the chair.
Representative Dahlstrom.
Mr. Chair, thank you. That was exactly my question, so thank you.
Okay. Gentlemen, thank you very much. Representative Grunberg?
Maybe I should ask, I can either ask Mr. Ruaro and or somebody from law, are there any other cases pending raising the same issue?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, none that I'm aware of, but the attorney from law may be more knowledgeable about that.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. Fine job. We have somebody here from. Is there anybody else who's here in the committee room that would like to testify? You're the Holiday man, right? Doc Holiday, come on up.
Doc Holiday. Oh man.
Let me pass this over to Max. Nice to see you again, sir. I'm sorry I forgot your first name.
Oh, that's fine, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Steve Rush. I'm in-house legal counsel for Holiday Companies. I appreciate the time to take with you today to discuss House Bill 187. Holiday is a privately held company based in Minneapolis, and we've been doing business in Alaska now for, it'll be 3 years this Sunday. We're operating 26 convenience stores that we acquired from Williams Express when they exited the market up here. I would like to discuss with you today House Bill 187 and respectfully request your passage of this bill as being in the interest of the business community, the retail business community of entities in Alaska that sell tobacco products. The bill does address the penalties and really more the process by which we impose sanctions on those individuals who make underage sales of tobacco products. The law as it currently stands was last amended in 2001, and Alaska adopted by far and away the most severe, strongest penalty matrix for this type of violation in the country, bar none. For a first violation, there is a 20-day suspension, 45 for a second, 90 in a year, and so on and so forth within a 24-month time period. We are not here to talk about that. This bill does nothing to change any of those sanctions that can be opposed by administrative law judge. If a retailer is negligent in the way it conducts its business, it deserves to have its endorsement holder business license suspended. Holiday strongly supports that and is making no attempt to change any of those penalties in the law. However, when the state amended the law in 2001, they forgot one thing. For a license holder, you have the right to due process of law when you're subject to sanction for an alleged underage sale that was part of a government sanction compliance sting. As we all know, the Fifth Amendment to our state and federal constitutions guarantee that we will not be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. It's a very, very basic concept of our American judiciary. Now, in order to sell tobacco at any of my holiday retail locations, I have to have a specific license for each one of those locations. Now, that license is the property right that we're referring to here. The Alaska Supreme Court recognized over 30 years ago in the context of a liquor license that that is a valuable property interest that's worthy of due process protection. That case is Frontier Saloon versus Alcohol Beverage Control Board. It was resolved back in 1974. Now, how does the current law deprive retailers such as Holiday Alaska of our due process rights? It was discussed by Representative Holmes, I think, quite well. It's essentially a two-part process here. Once there is an alleged failed compliance check, the employee is charged as an individual with a fairly minor, low-grade criminal offense. It's not even a misdemeanor. In fact, the statute provides that the maximum penalty for that individual can be $300. It can be lower than that if within the discretion of the judge or during the plea negotiations, it's arrived at something lower. The employee always pleads guilty. It's never contested. To run out and hire a lawyer to fight a $300 maximum fine is simply not a wise decision to make. Most people go in, explain the circumstances to the judge, and try to resolve it as best they can. That certainly makes sense. However, me as a retailer, as Holiday, I have no notice of that hearing, and I'm not allowed to participate. Now, once that conviction has been entered, the second part of the proceeding starts, and that's where the license enforcement proceedings begin. The process is really an administrative one before an administrative law judge. And in most situations that I've been dealing with this in my years at Holiday, it's a very fair process. We're treated with respect. We're given our right to prove that we're not negligent, that we're responsible with this kind of product. Not in this case. The state need not prove that I'm guilty or that I'm negligent. It's irrelevant as to what good faith efforts I, as Holiday, have done to educate and train my employees and to prevent this kind of event from happening. The statute expressly limits the evidence of my guilt to the underlying criminal conviction, the proceeding I was not allowed to participate in. It is a violation of our Fifth Amendment right to due process when we are being punished based upon a proceeding in which we did not participate in and had absolutely no notice of. Now, this argument is no longer theoretical. It was just discussed by the gentleman, distinguished gentleman before me, as to the case that was decided back in October by Superior Court Judge Morse in Anchorage. After we acquired the Williams units in April of 2004, taking on 26 convenience stores is an enormous undertaking when you think of all the various aspects of the business that we had to get our arms around. In the months immediately following the acquisition, we had a few violations, I think three. Since then, our citations has been exemplary. We haven't really had any issues since that time period that are subject to enforcement. But once we received these citations and we realized that we were going to lose our license for 20 days at each of these locations, and we had done nothing wrong, we had to resist that. So we went to the administrative law proceeding. I have to tell you, it's really the most predetermined event you can ever attend in your life when it's supposedly a hearing based upon a party's guilt or innocence. The state did not have any obligation or burden to introduce any evidence of our negligence, of our culpability in this matter. It was irrelevant as to what our efforts had been in this area to prevent underage sales of tobacco. I have to tell you, as in-house counsel representing my company, there is nothing more frustrating for me to sit there and not be allowed to do absolutely anything. All the state had to do was trot up the three criminal convictions, the gavel sounded, case over, holiday, you're guilty. You're going to lose your license for 20 days at each of these locations, even though you did nothing wrong. And lest you think 20 days is no big deal, it's huge. The type of customer traffic that we have at convenience stores that purchase this product is very high. If they cannot purchase tobacco, they will go elsewhere to purchase tobacco and these are the big items, gasoline, inside sales, drink bar, coffee, soft drinks. We have a holiday pantry program with sandwiches that we make. We have our own commissary here. Those folks who would otherwise buy that from me are not going to purchase those items. Because of an unfortunate incident where there's been no guilt to holiday, we will lose tens of thousands of dollars. In a unit that does significant volume, a 20-day suspension in our estimate, we haven't suffered one yet, but we could lose in excess of $100,000 for one violation with a 20-day suspension. Now,
if I could interrupt.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'm sorry.
It's okay. First of all, our friend Annie Carbonetti is here. Annie, this committee always runs better when you're in the room. It's nice to see you.
Are we allowed to compliment her on her looks now?
Yes, you may, Representative Crumper.
Thank you. Just so the record's clear.
So just so that for the record, just for my own, because we're treading into ice, it's getting a little thin for me, and I'm supportive of this bill. I got to be careful that we don't paint with such a broad stroke, because I'm thinking right now, I think in terms of alcohol, because to me, alcohol and tobacco is a great deal of parallel, a great deal of similarity. And I'm thinking of my friend Chief Isaac Junby out in Eagle and the problems that he's had with a package store out there who was conducting their affairs legally. But they had members of Eagle that were riding snow machines from 10 or 15 miles away and were falling off their snow machines because they were intoxicated and people were dying of frostbite. So I just want to caution you a little bit before you get too high up on your high horse that these rules are in place to protect minors. They are in place to protect the general public. I understand that we may be violating holiday rights specifically, but in general, this law and the punitive nature of it, I'm supportive of because it keeps us from selling tobacco products to minors, and minors get hooked on tobacco. So just thought I'd just throttle you back just a little bit in your testimony, remind you why the law is there in the first place and that many of us are generally supportive of it. So thank you. Go proceed.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as I indicated earlier in my testimony, we're supportive of it as well in keeping the punitive sanctions that are currently in place that have no comparison in virtually any other state. No state that we do business in, based upon the 50 state and DC review that I've done, there's nothing remotely close to this. If an administrative law judge, after an appropriate and meaningful hearing where we're allowed to introduce evidence, feels as though that we should be or any other retailer should be subject to the full sanction of the law, so be it. All I want is my day in court and the ability to defend my client. I believe Ms. Representative Coghill had a question earlier on in terms of aggravating circumstances in the section of the statute where there was some concern as to what that may be. And I think that enters into an administrative law judge's ability to look at a case and decide that if someone is guilty, they should deserve more of a suspension than it would be in a situation that seemed less culpable. And the example that I would give in an aggravating set of circumstances would be in a situation where your store manager made the sale and was the subject of the sting operation. If one of your managers is involved in it, I would look at that as an aggravating set of circumstances. The finding of guilt and the appropriate punishment are two separate offenses. The statute allows and provides for a finding of negligence, a finding of guilt, as outlined in the subsection 4, talking about whether the retailer had appropriate protections in place to prevent the underage sale of tobacco. The second part of any penalty phase, any penalty provisions, be it either criminal or civil, is to determine what the appropriate penalty is. Now, say a retailer has some of the protections in subsection T, but not all of them. Should that retailer be treated differently than a retailer who didn't care and who has done nothing to prevent the sale of tobacco to minors by having an education and training program, by making people sign off daily on a sheet that they know they need to card people. We card people who look to be under 40 years of age. Did the retailer have appropriate sanctions in place for those individuals who did not? If you have some of them, but not all of them, I think you're less guilty than someone who doesn't care at all and has done nothing. And in that situation, the aggravating factors would, in my view, make for a finding that the administrative law judge should impose the maximum sanction. It would give the judge that we allow in so many other circumstances the ability to find a range of penalties. But the law as it currently is unconstitutional. That was held by Judge Morse back in October 27 of last year, when after the analysis, the arguments that I've given you, and I apologize for my passion, but being a lawyer representing my client, I'm virtually prohibited from doing what I took an oath 20 years ago to do. But in any event, the judge held Holiday has not been afforded a meaningful administrative hearing when the state is permitted to utilize the judgment of conviction of another person, the employee, even if that person was an employee, as proof of what Holiday did. And the judge went on to offer further rationalization, et cetera, as to why this is a violation of our due process rights. And the judge relied primarily on Frontier Saloon, but there's also another case called Javid versus Department of Public Safety that Judge Morse also ruled upon, used in finding a violation of our due process rights. The gentleman before me certainly gave a very, I think, a thorough explanation of what the statute is attempting to accomplish. Are probably not as thoroughly knowledgeable about our particular case. It was not appealed by the state. The three citations that Holiday faced at that point are now, they're now gone. And I find it very telling that the state chose not to appeal those adverse rulings. As to the specifics of the statute, I know we have a number of parties who want to testify, and I'm certainly willing to talk about the specifics with you and any questions that you may have, as I think I can address some of the types of issues as Representative Coghill had. But let me conclude by saying this bill does nothing to change the teeth in this law. Alaska will still have by far the strongest legislation on the books against the underage sale of tobacco products to people who aren't or unlawful.